Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Erica, who's going to give herself a short introduction and then a much longer intro into the things she's done in her career that should make us trust her as an expert.
Hi, I'm Erica Ziarcangelo. I am the CEO of Web Content Development, and we are a full-service marketing agency. We've been in business about 14 years, and I own several other marketing companies. I own one called Create One, which is a video production company, and V12 Strategies, which is a marketing technology company.
All right, so kind of spread across the board there. Where did that come out of? Did you come out fresh-faced out of college, or did you go and intern at a company and develop some of these skills in marketing, that led to opening the agency? Were you the original founder of these agencies, or do you have partners that you've kind of developed this with?
Absolutely. So I actually went to school for marketing and I got a job doing marketing for private healthcare, and this is back in 2001. And so I really learned through that job every facet of marketing, whether it was HTML coding websites or when social media first began, and really how to use these different marketing tools. So then in about 2013, I actually was a single mom and I had a toddler. She was, I think, about 3 at the time. And I decided to launch my own agency. And I really, at that point, wanted flexibility. I had really learned a lot about marketing. And I started my own agency and started, working and having contracts with different companies. Now, fast forward here, and I've had, worked with about 800 companies. And between all the companies, probably have generated almost $300 million with all the different contracts, and really just evolved. The first company has been there the longest. And then I think we opened the other company about 4 years ago, was my husband and I. And then my husband and I launched the video production company about a year ago.
Interesting. I'm curious how you're looking at that as like scaling up, because sometimes, I've launched my own agency is a fancy way of saying I'm a freelancer and I do like 90% of the consulting and maybe have a few subcontractors for this or that or third party tools. But what's been your experience of actually like growing that, hiring people, finding talent, building workflows that continue to work in the face of an industry that is continually, I don't know, it's like Phoenix-like, right? Like 2001, SEO is dead. 2005, SEO is dead. 2010, SEO is dead. 2015, SEO is dead. Featured snippets comes out, SEO is dead. ChatGPT becomes big. AI overviews, SEO is dead. It's like the more that it dies, the more that it lives. In the face of that evolution, what has been your experience in hiring people and structuring your services to adapt or adjust accordingly?
So it's funny, it's a good question and it's a great analogy. So when we first started out, of course, it was just me, and it was literally like I was a freelancer, and then I had a couple people. And then I like to say we kind of became like a real agency in the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. And that's when we really started to put like our structure of our company in. So that was like we created an organizational chart of the different people that we would need to hire and the different divisions of the organization, and who was in charge of who. And we really started hiring. We opened an office, and we really became like, quote unquote, a real company at that point in time. And so I think it's just one of those things of like you have to go through it and you have to learn it, because there were so many things along the way of like building that company that you don't really know until like you go through it, like with hiring people and with keeping people and retaining clients and processes and organization. And it's not just you go from like, oh, I do marketing for people, to okay, now I have to run this business. And this business is its own machine. It's not like just like you're doing SEO for some clients. Like you're running a business, you have employees, you have taxes, you have to keep an office up. There's all these different things that you go into when you go from freelancing to really just running and having the business.
So in-house, in an office, remote, we've seen quite a journey from all professions are basically like, even the concept of like, oh, you work remotely was a joke in like 1980s of, oh yeah, you work remotely, aka you call people and try to sell them an encyclopedia. I think that was a joke in, Stranger Things, the newest seasons of Stranger Things. Like, she works remotely. No, she was selling encyclopedias desperately, but that's really changed. And I've seen it kind of vacillate between professionals really liking it, a subculture of management-minded people really hating it, and kind of, there's a balancing act, I'm sure, of like striking, because yes, it is easier to look at someone's face and like talk about what's going on with an account versus being on a Zoom call with two or three or four people who are maybe, they've got their screen divided and they've got something else going on the other half, and they might chime in halfway through. But you also have those limits of context of like, okay, how much time am I spending commuting? And how much of my energy am I actually using? Like, I watched this day in the life video of this digital professional, and she wakes up at 4 a.m., does all her makeup, takes care of the kid, drops them off, and then gets her latte, goes to work, sends three emails, takes a walk, comes back, eats lunch at a Thai place, sends two more emails, takes a video call, and then goes home at like 6 o'clock at night. All of that effort to like send four emails and attend a meeting that could have been remote. It kind of feels like trade-off. So what's your opinion? I've talked a bit, but I'm curious on the work-life balance, remote, in-house with your three companies.
I really think it depends on your goals. Like back before COVID, I would say office. You have to be in an office. Then COVID happened. And then it was like, you really had no choice but to figure out how to run it remotely. And I have some clients that run multi-million dollar companies and all their people are remote. And then I have other clients that are like, we insist on an office. We have to have everyone here and ready. And I think it really depends on who you hire and what you have. Because right now, we have a combination. We have a studio and, we film at our studio and we have employees in our studio and we have it like that. But we also have, some flexibility. Like I have employees in the UK who, we're in Tampa, Florida. So, but I want the employee in the UK because she's an amazing creative collaborator and she's one of the best people for the job. So again, I think it's just a flexibility. There's certain positions that are like, okay, this is a better, in the office position. And then maybe we have a team of people. So I would say right now we're hybrid, but we went from being completely remote freelance to an office to now hybrid. So we have gone through every single facet of this journey of like how you work. And I will say I really like the flexibility of being able to figure out both.
I think that's what I, as I'm striving and building my own thing at SEO Arcade, kind of podcast-centric content marketing, link-building machine, I think. I really do want to lean into, mostly doing remote because there's incredible amounts of talent out there. But, I'm also going to have an assistant here in town that I can meet at the co-working space, so just to like go over some of the physical stuff. So I think hybrid is a fantastic model. And I think hybrid really is kind of the model for digital marketing in general now. Like, I don't think that I said this in a previous interview. I think that the golden age of SEO as Google reverse engineering is over. And I think that we have to, we're struggling. We're in that phase of like, SEO is dead. Now it's GEO, AI SEO, blah, 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 all these acronyms. I would dare to say either one of two things. Let's go back to Webmaster, 1998. Like, I'm the Webmaster, I'm bringing it back.
Yeah, I
Because
like
it's
it.
interconnected, it solves all of those problems. Yes, SEO is SEOs, GEO is GEO, AI SEO. We got to figure out all those things as the webmaster for this company because we're now interconnected and looking at the organic side and connecting to these email campaigns and thinking about the impact of our influencers that we're buying the time for. We're creating TikTok and creating video content for Instagram that's leading a channel that feeds into our email drip campaign. that has these organic, these website downloadables that are, you know, so they all are pieces that fit together. So let's bring back Webmaster. Like, let's not argue about whether SEO is dead or whether GEO is a more appropriate term. Let's just face the fact that we can't make an industry singularly now off of the back of organic traffic from Google. We gotta be more interconnected, and why not, you know, go back with some vintage, put on the bell bottoms and become a webmaster again.
I remember those days of the webmaster and the HTML sites and the backlinks, and that was before the Google penalties, and it was such a different landscape in the marketing area. It was before social media, you know, came into play. And what I tell people now, because I've heard that too, like SEO is dead or AI SEO, it's like SEO is not dead. There's just a lot more elements to it than there ever was. It takes a lot more. Like, you have all these different pieces of this puzzle and they all work together, and you have to figure out how they work together, just like, you know, doing on-page SEO and creating content. But then there's an element of YouTube and video content, and there's an element of social media content, and there's all these different elements that go into this piece of content rather than just like throwing it on the page with the keywords and just sort of throwing some backlinks in that direction and kind of expecting it to rank. It just doesn't work that way anymore.
It's almost more either traffic acquisition, audience. I think audience acquisition is closer to the true goal now. And audience acquisition and maintenance with revenue goals in mind. So I myself was incredibly keyword focused. I made, you know, the first version of SEOarcade.com. It actually was like a keyword research tool, and it was focused on, okay, you get this organic click-through rate from this set keyword cluster based off of the top 10 sites that rank. And I'm like, oh, that's deucedly clever. And then we'll multiply that by the actual conversion rate, then the conversion rate by how many sales close, and then we'll get the actual, you know, multiply that by the revenue from that service or product. And that kind of works, but it's now it's multi-channel. Right, we're looking at the outcome of revenue from our email program. We're looking at the outcome of our influencer campaigns, which part of it bounces back because like TikTok is now almost zero click unless you're paying a lot to get your link there. But if you have an influencer wearing your pink pants, somebody is going to be looking for that brand name, that influencer, and doing a Google search to find out what that was, to find the product to sell it. So if you're not optimized for, you know, pink pants influencer Davy Jones or whoever's wearing them, like there's an extra layer to it because there's this brand entity gap. And it's kind of goes back to another thing that Google lied to us about of like using click data to influence rankings. Well, now we know that there's literally like an ABC of which the C is that click behavior. And we're also looking at I've run into it multiple times of like, how do you claim a brand on Google when you put in that brand and it does not appear?
I mean, it's so interesting because I think you have like your foundational SEO, which is like your website, your Google listing, your social media assets. Like, you have all this foundational, but then after that, you have like almost like your promotional, your influencer, and that kind of builds up upon the foundational that has to be in place so that when that person sees it and then they do a search and they look for you, that you have all these ranking assets that are already set up, that are already optimized, and you already have everything in order to be found.
It's like findability is, you know, it's the proof of your authenticity. You know, I guess that's the separating, the distinguishing factor, and why Google made it the C out of that ABC of how you rank. Because if people are genuinely going to Google and searching for your brand plus object, brand plus service, that's an incredible real world signal that you actually exist. More than, you know, link signals, because link signals, let's face it, are fairly easy to fake. You know, and they have to go hop through all of these extra steps to prevent, you know, spammers from using that. So of course they'd use a cleaner signal, not the cleanest, because there's, you know, multiple brands using the same name, different intent, different region, different product, same brand name. There's only a limited number of there's a limited amount of creativity, and that it seems that applies to how people name their businesses, apparently.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. I mean, the other thing that's interesting is that, and the thing I really do love about SEO and marketing is the data. Like, I've had people in the past be like, "Oh, that's not going to rank or that's not going to do anything." You can't say that unless you put it up there and you look at the data. And that's the thing that's so cool about kind of this area is like, okay, did it work or didn't it work? Because there's something like, I mean, I've been doing marketing for my family's pizzeria for a long time, pretty much, you know, almost this whole time they've had digital assets. And it was like, what's going to rank here? And the weirdest thing, people cutting pizza, ASMR. We have a video with 64 million views. Like, who would have thought that the simplicity of a video that you can take a million times in a row is going to rank that much? But you don't know until you put it out there and you research and you look at what the data tells you to do.
I was talking with Michael McDougall, the writing agency, earlier, and he was talking about for his pool cleaning client, like Riverstone, we're just going to do like ASMR pool cleaning videos, you know, because I've seen, like, we were joking, like, I saw a guy that he does stump grinding and just the machine going back and forth, and there's a huge audience for just simple things being done right, thoroughly, over and over, as video content. And so, like, why not lean into like this multi-channel of like, okay, well, I mean, it's proof that you're real. It's geographic evidence. You're building an audience, you know, and you can. This was so smart. Matt Brooks of Esoteric brought this up. He's like, okay, if you want to rank locally, go and find the most popular pizza places and follow all of the people that follow that local pizza place. And repeat that for every unique business that's truly in your community. You know, if you've got a local speakeasy, if you've got a train depot museum, people like and follow those things because they're genuinely in that community. But if you start following those people, you start getting follows back from people who are genuinely in your community. Then, if you're putting out something that's, you know, local or interesting, then you start to build a geographically specific audience that can echo back. And if you are constantly showing, you know, cleaning up the stump at Dogwood Park in Cookeville, people are like, oh yeah, I know where that is. And he did that. Okay. And then when they need that thing, it's right there in their head. But it's about audience acquisition. There's nothing about that that's necessarily SEO. There's no link building. There isn't any written content to optimize. But that type of campaign is exactly what I would recommend now, of some audience or community outreach aspect to bolster, you know, brand visibility and signal for a local business, something like that. Or, you know, sponsoring a trash cleanup and, you know, making that your thing, or doing a community pledge drive, or gathering coats for the winter. Like, there's such an online hybrid opportunity now where I think people are like, the lines are starting to bleed over. You know, it used to be like, well, I need to get online, I gotta go home, hope my dial-up's working, and I gotta get on my laptop. And now, with the ubiquity of like, everybody is on their phones all day. I got mine. You
All the
know,
time.
it's right here.
Yep, you
But
got it. Same phone.
interesting thing I challenge you with is, how passive are we with this versus what we create with this laptop that I'm pointing at that you can't see?
You know, I'd say again, it's about equal. Like, you know, as a content creator, it's like there is content that I create directly on my phone, like with social media. Like when I do my TikTok posts, I do them on my phone.
Good point.
Really for all the accounts. And I mean, I have like multiple, like in Instagram, I have, you know, 10 Instagram accounts I'm creating content for. I have a bunch of TikTok accounts and I'm doing that all on my phone. Now, YouTube, for example, I'm doing that on my computer. And like, you know, I have a podcast, so I'm recording my podcast on Riverside. I'm editing it, I'm pushing it out. But again, I send the clips to my phone for TikTok. it's a very like, what tool do you plug in and what do you use to kind of get the most? I mean, my favorite platform, which, you know, I check TikTok, not TikTok, YouTube. I check YouTube on my phone multiple times a day because I have the studio where I can check all the analytics and all the data. And first thing I do in the morning is I check YouTube studio to figure out, you know, how much traffic did I get yesterday from YouTube? And then, you know, throughout the day though, when I'm working on YouTube, I'm on the computer and I'm, you know, pushing it out, putting tags, pushing out, you know, different content. So yeah, it's definitely like I have a desktop, I have a laptop, and I have a phone in front of my face. Like I have, you know, this is on my right hand, this is my laptop's on my left hand, and I have this in front of me.
I was going to pay my karate class fees, and I was like, where is the phone number? It was at the bottom of the page, and then I had to highlight it like a savage and copy and paste it into it. I'm like, I got to talk to Sensei Trey. Like, it's 2025. Phone number needs to be clickable, and while I'm at it, it should be something that it can track, you know, too. Like, it seems scary. I feel a tremendous sense of empathy for true small business owners, because there are now so many things to navigate. There's such an incredible varied checklist of, okay, well, not only do I need a site, but it needs to be mobile accessible, phone numbers that, you know, aren't just text, but they're, you can tap them on your phone while you're walking around to call. And, you know, that's just the first layer. Then, you know, like you said, Instagram, and do we do Facebook paid, you know, and when we do that, do we populate just to the Facebook side or go to the Instagram side? And then all of these multi-channels, it's just a lot.
Yeah, you almost these days have to either be a marketing expert or be able to afford to have someone who is a marketing expert, because there are so many facets of marketing. It changes every single day. There's a new thing almost every single day. And it can also be one of those things, and I find this a lot with clients, is like what it's actually going to take to hit the goal is different than what the client thinks it's going to take. It's like if you go on a diet and, you know, in your mind you think, oh, it's only going to take 2 weeks and I'll just go to the gym like three times and maybe I'll just stop like drinking soda. Like just, you know, easy peasy. But then at the end of the 2 weeks, you're like, oh, I didn't lose the weight that I wanted. Because really it's going to take you 3 months and you're going to need to go to the gym 5 days a week and you're going to need to completely change your diet and you're going to need to walk 10,000 steps. And so this kind of like misestimation of the effort is, I think, a lot of the reasons why people think that marketing doesn't work, or why it's kind of a hard subject to kind of face, is because it's, you have to really look at like, what is it actually going to take for me to sell this much through marketing? How much marketing is it going to take, and how long is it going to take, and what am I going to need to do to really do this?
It's interesting because it's you know, as these new fields open up of, you know, ChatGPT, it's an unknown variant, unknown and unproven channel. I did just see my Icelandic e-commerce guy posted, hey, $30,000 in sales of high ticket e-commerce purchases sourced and tracked to ChatGPT conversations. And I was like, ding, that's a lot. I mean, but that is his niche and specialty, so you go 3V. But it is kind of a wild, wild west. Again, I like the wild, wild west. I just hope I'm not going to get shot by the bandits this time or get held up at the bank, because there are gold fields. I just want to be the one selling the shovels this time.
Yeah, I totally get that 100%. I mean, AI is a tool that makes really things faster and easier, and it's an amazing research tool, but there's certain things I think it has to be really used responsibly. And you have to know, like, it's not always going to give you something that's a fact. Not what it says isn't always 100% true. Because I see things where I'll put a prompt in for something and I'll be like, well, that's not even what happened. Or that's inaccurate. But you have to know that, you know, you as a human, you know, use it for time saving, use it to help you with, to fortify your efforts. But at the end of the day, you're the one kind of moving the dial on everything.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, we both as practitioners in marketing that are using these tools then to reach and influence a huge number of people, have a big responsibility to create systems that account for the fallibility of ChatGPT. It's your most popular but least accurate employee, when it comes to facts about your company. Might literally make up URLs, so you might want to double check your 404s for pages that got invented. There's a script. There's a you can vibe code a script for that. But it's funny because there's so many like little checkbox things in SEO that are becoming easier in certain ways, like internal linking. I'm trialing out this tool, Magic Rinku, of it's using it ingested the whole WordPress site. It found all my orphan content and it's suggesting the other articles that should internally link to it. And in its interface, I can check, I want that anchor text that already exists, or it will write a sentence to add to the paragraph. And you can specify specific anchor text, or it can like use AI to match the page. Like this would take literally, 20 minutes for one post to build like three internal links. And if you're justifying that cost to the client, you're like, yeah, I built some internal links. So like how many? Like, I don't know, like 12, and it took like an hour or two. And they're like, I don't know, Jeremy. You linked within our own site. Is that like a scalable? I'm like, yes, it's an important part of the SEO strategy for your content to give context in these links, and like all of these fundamentals still exist. But now, that now I can click those buttons much faster, do the same thing, have a better output, and have a better content article at the end of the day because it's going to navigate the reader from something relevant to something more valuable for me, make sure all my content's interconnected while also boosting relevant signals for Google. So, that type of application of AI capability is, if I showed, 2007 SEO Jeremy as I started, like, oh my God, this is black magic. Like, this is technology so advanced that it's like magic. But now, what happens when we hit the point of technological ubiquity, where we become inured to the magic of these things?
I mean, it can be very enchanting and it can become very, like, you can be feel like that very easily. But again, I think it's one of those things where you have to look at, like, it's a differentiation thing of, like, your tool that you're using for the interlinking is phenomenal. And that's something that you want to use it for. If you're writing a thesis on marketing, you may be able to get data and research and, help get help with different, how the article sounds, but you have to be responsible for what you're saying in there.
I think that's true, and it's part of the concept, I think, of the downside of AI and AI-generated content, LLMs. It's mathematical in its nature. It's predicting what sentence sounds good based off of this, and plus all the extra layers of technology. But it can only base that off of what it's given, and the inaccuracies, the hallucinations, come from when we allow it that extra leeway of creativity, leaving objective fact. So only you and I can actually generate that, have information gain. It's the compounding of our own personal experiences within an expertise context shared between us in a human conversation. So I think this podcast, other podcasts, video podcasts, conversations, humans are going to become more valuable as people realize how regurgitative, how repetitive AI and LLM-based content truly is.
Yeah.
And it has to be.
I think the internet too is probably at some point going to purge itself because I think at one point it's going to get very out of hand and then it's going to get to a point where it almost has to do it because there's so much there that it will have no option. And I think we're in a very interesting time of technology. I absolutely love technology. It saves so much time. But on the other hand, I'm an author and I have books that I write, both literary fiction, young adult and children's books. But that's not something that I necessarily use technology for. That is something that I, as an artist, would feel like very compromised if I used AI for something that I was putting out as my own work.
Right. No, that's definitely true. And I think I'm going to patent a keyboard that does fingerprint tracking and puts it on the blockchain for each letter to confirm that this was a human generated article, that a human with human, the specific human, actually typed all of these letters into this document. I think that's going to be, human certified content is probably going to be the next, organic label. It's like organic food, non-GMO, but for our content, it really kind of has to be.
Yeah, humanly written. Because I still have a team of writers and we have some clients that are like, I only use AI. Okay, fine. I have other clients who are like, I never want to use AI. I want the human writers to write the content. I want you guys to do the SEO. I want you to post it. And we do it like that because we have customers that's how they want it done. And they're still getting really good results. I don't see necessarily a change in results of someone using AI. Now, I have seen a little bit with AI content where it will go up a lot at the beginning and then it will sort of trail off. That's one of the trends that I've really seen just studying it a little bit, which I don't see as much with human content. But again, I think it's one of those things that we talked about at the beginning where it's not just content and SEO. You have an entire, arsenal of tools that you need to use now, which are sort of SEO support tools.
I think it's I call it the Icarus effect. Usually those are, they're the SEO bros, or they come forward and they're like, here's my case study. And, look at, I published 30,000 commercial real estate articles. I'm like, look at all my traffic. And then you follow that domain and check like 3 weeks later and it drops off. So
it crashed.
Totally crashed. You're like, okay. Yeah. So the story there is don't go crazy. Like, moderation. There are ways that we can use these tools responsibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we'll do a strategy where it's like, we humanly write our blog articles and really it's, information and businesses that we really want to study the marketing and we really want to put out something that's really valuable to people. And that's how we do our videos. And so I really lead with, how can this content benefit the reader and how can we be creative with it? Not like, how can we publish a million posts this month?
Yeah, it really is kind of fundamental going back to one of two things. Either go in and record your conversation with your very passionate tile salesman, because they do that all day, every day. And they're going to say, I'm so tired of people not knowing that you don't put tile over fireplaces. They'll have a pet peeve. That they'll have some crusade, but it's also a sticking point of like, half of my struggle is of tiling is your floor is uneven and you actually have foundation problems. So if people knew before they got their tile installed, hey, this might not line up because you've got foundation problems. That's something that should be on the website. That's a problem that you can solve, and then the problem that people are having, and then that compounds. But it's a real world issue, and it makes the website not just a fishing hook, but an octopus with its arms reaching out and pulling things back, and you've got your mouth crunching those tasty mollusks up. But there's a purpose to it. Make your website purposeful. And, if you're a law office, think about those more long-term value cases of like, why would people come back again to this site? Or what is it once somebody comes through the door or they become a lead? Hey, they're going to need case docket information. They're going to need to know how to appear when they dress for showing up at court. They're going to need to know how the bail process works, and here's four links for, Crossville's jail system. You're going to need to go to this place. Those aren't things that are necessarily going to have any sort of search volume, but they are things that are definitely, okay, how do I, finish the bail bond process? I don't understand. Like, that sort of clarity is what is making your website have longer value than just a fishing hook to lure them in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a place. I mean, when someone Googles you, the first thing usually they find is your website. So it's like they have to easily, within 3 to 5 seconds, know exactly what you do. And that's what I see a lot with websites is people will go to the site and they'll be like, what do these people do? Like, I don't understand. And then also having just, like you said, simple navigation where they're really answering people's questions. One cool tool that you probably know all about is the people always ask, the Google suggested questions. Those are really nice because you could literally go look at what questions people are asking, or SEMrush has a really nice, list for almost anything you search. And you could do a knowledge base where people can very easily search any question and get the question answered on your website. And I found really with attorneys, like you said, and even just health and medical clients, this is like a really good resource for people to have.
Yeah, I love also ask.com. I interviewed their founder, super smart guy, Mark Williams Cook. He had the Google endpoint exploit that exposed how Google classifies different queries into buckets based off of whether they were Boolean, like yes, no, whether they were navigational. So just understanding that Google itself classifies queries as part of its ranking, as part of the visual part of rendering the SERP, is incredibly helpful to think through. Okay, well, if I'm putting myself into my client's shoes, maybe I should just actually, I don't know, interview my ideal guest, interview my ideal customer, and ask them what were the qualifying things that led you to find? Like, what were you actually looking for? What were the problems? Record that. And then turn that into content, answer those things. Like, that should be one task that, whether you're an SEO, a webmaster, digital marketing agency, whatever, on your list should be getting a true client interview.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about a lot and we use a lot, survey data. The best way to know what people want is just to ask them. And we have, we have SEO tools which are amazing, like SEMrush. I mean, YouTube has it within their trends where they'll tell you what people are searching for. Google also has their trends that you can look and see what is a relevant topic, what are people searching for. And you can really craft your content based on, in your industry, what do people really want to know?
I love it. As to kind of wrap up here, let people know where they can find you, where they can follow you. You've prolific author, apparently. So name drop a few of your books, and I'll make sure that it all gets added to the show notes.
Thank you so much. So, for anything marketing, it's webcontentdevelopment.com, but I recently launched this author career, which it's funny enough, it has nothing to do with marketing. It's about pizza. My family opened a pizza place back in 1960, and my first book became an Amazon bestseller. It's about my grandfather's journey as an Italian immigrant to open this pizzeria. So if you search, Erica DiArcangelo or a story about pizza or pizza story podcast, that's probably the easiest, quickest way to find me just because I spend about half my time now in the pizza world.
Well, that's a good slice.
Yeah.
I will make sure to add that to the show notes, and thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today.